In this chapter, we are going to learn about how goods are classified. However, before we go into the detailed rules, a quick reminder about why classification is important. Imagine you are an importer of vitamins from America. The classification code of a product determines the rate of duty applicable to it. Perhaps we think our vitamins should be classified as a medicament, which attracts a 0% rate. But what if this code is wrong? Well, you could be paying too little duty. In this case, customs are not going to be too thrilled about this. They can claim back duty from an importer for up to 3 years, in accordance with Article 221, Subsection 3 of the code. And you could face criminal penalties, which include going to prison if there is intent to defraud them. Other criminal penalties include facing a fine of up to 3 times the value of the goods. These criminal penalty provisions can be found in Section 50 or 167 of CIMA 1979. You may already be familiar with these penalties and the civil ones that customs could invoke if you've listened to the lecture on prohibitions, restrictions and penalties. If not, listen to that lecture after you've finished playing this one. The other side of the coin is that you could be paying too much duty. E.g., perhaps we think our vitamins should be classified as a food supplement, which might attract a duty of more than 12%. In this case, your boss is not going to be thrilled if the code is wrong and you are overpaying duty. And remember, not only does the code determine the rate of duty that applies, but it also determines other things such as licensing requirements, excise duties, and preferences. Some of these you will learn about in later lectures. Therefore, at this stage you can see why it is really important that you import your goods using the correct code. Now that we know why classification is so important, we need to look at the legislation which will tell us how we classify our goods. Just before we do that, we need to make sure that you are happy with some terminology. We've said that most classification codes in the UK are 10 digits in length. The codes are all contained in the tariff, and there are approximately 150,000 classification codes covering every single type of product you can import. Goods are categorised in one of the 21 sections of the tariff, the numbers of which are expressed as Roman numerals. For example, Section 6 covers products of the chemical and allied industries. Sections are then further subdivided into chapters. For example, continuing with Section 6, it includes Chapter 30, which covers pharmaceutical products. The chapter number gives us the first 2 digits of our classification code. Chapters are then subdivided further into headings, which give us our first 4 digits. For example, heading 3001 covers glands and other organs. Note that the first 4 digits are called the tariff heading. Each heading is then divided further still to turn our 4-digit code into a 6-digit code. These codes are known as the harmonized system codes. You will learn more about the harmonized system in the lecture on international administration and the World Customs Organization, WCO. In brief, a number of countries across the world use the harmonized system. This means that if you import products into, say, America, as well as the EU, your product will have the same first 6-digit classification code. This helps to facilitate the movement of trade. Once we have ascertained the first 6 digits, the next 2 digits make up the EU-wide 8-digit classification code, or TARIC code. The remaining 2 digits are used where imports of certain products need distinguishing. For example, where imports may benefit from a tariff quota or be subject to licensing or other measures. Where a further breakdown is not necessary, the last 2 digits will be shown as a 00. For most imports in the UK, codes are generally 10-digit in length. Each section and chapter of the tariff have notes at the beginning of them, which detail the goods that they contain. We'll look at these in a minute. To put all of this into context, the next slide contains a sample page from the tariff for Chapter 30. Study it and identify the chapter, the heading, the harmonized system codes, the tariff codes, and the final 10 digits. So, let's look at the legislation that tells us how we classify our goods. If you haven't got your Tolly's Customs Duties Handbook, that is, the red book in front of you, go and get it and open it up at Council Regulation 2658 of 87, and the relevant bit is Annex 1. There are 6 rules to use when classifying your goods. They are called General Interpretive Rules, or GIRs for short. and we'll go through them in order. Follow them in your legislation as we work through each of them. Rule 1. This says, the title of sections, chapters and subchapters are provided for ease of reference only. For legal purposes, classification shall be determined according to the terms of the headings and any relative section or chapter notes, and provided such headings or notes do not otherwise require, according to the following provisions. Rule 1 is basically there to tell you to look at the detailed notes in the tariff, and not to rely on titles to provide all the information you need. For example, Chapter 95 includes the following: toys, games and sports requisites, parts and accessories thereof. From the title, we don't know if children's bicycles are included in this chapter. Just because they are not in the title, it does not mean that they are not covered within this chapter. What we need to do is look in detail at the notes to the chapter. The notes say, this chapter does not cover children's bicycles, heading 8712. This clears things up then. Bicycles are not included in Chapter 95 by virtue of the chapter notes. Rule 2 is next. Rule 2 is split into Part A and Part B. Rule 2A says, any reference in a heading to an article shall be taken to include a reference to that article, incomplete or unfinished, provided that, as presented, the incomplete or unfinished article has the essential character of the complete or finished article. What a long sentence! To recap, the important phrases are, the article is incomplete or unfinished, and has the essential character of the complete or finished article. To continue with Rule 2A, it carries on to say, it shall also be taken to include a reference to that article complete or finished, or falling to be classified as complete or finished by virtue of this rule, presented unassembled or disassembled. There are 2 points raised by this rule. Take a bike. If it is completely finished, it is classified as a bike. But what if we remove the saddle and remove the handlebars? Do we still have a bike? Or do we have bike parts? And does it actually matter? To encourage production to take place in the EU, and thus give jobs to EU workers, parts can generally be imported at lower duty rates than the finished articles. If you think about it, a complete bike does not require any factory or workers, whereas parts that need assembling would provide jobs within the EU. If our bike, in the above example, was classified as parts, the rate might be around 3%, whereas the finished bike might incur a customs duty of around 15%. So the classification of it is very important. But what do we classify the bike without the saddle and handlebars as? What we need to do is decide what constitutes essential character. Is the bike without saddle and handlebars still essentially a bike? Historically, this was considered a subjective matter, with importers arguing one way and customs the other. Because of this uncertainty, explanatory notes were written to clarify when an unassembled bike has the essential character of the finished item. Where it has the frame, the fork, and at least two of the following components present, it has the essential character of a finished bike. A set of wheels, crank gear, steering unit, and brake system. You can see from this that the rules could cause customs to disagree with a classification code you have picked. Because of this, you might want to obtain a binding ruling. You'll learn about this in a little while. Now, the second part of the rule talked about disassembled or unassembled articles. Carrying on with our previous example of the bike, you're unlikely to ship it in finished, as it would take up too much room on the plane or ship, etc., and would increase your freight costs. So more likely you would disassemble the bike and then ship it in a box of parts. According to this rule, it is still classified as a bike, even though it is disassembled. So, a quick recap. Articles presented either incomplete or unfinished, which have the essential character of the finished article, are classified as that finished article, and complete articles that are presented unassembled or disassembled are also classified as the finished article itself. We now come on to the second part of Rule 2. Rule 2B says, any reference in a heading to a material or substance shall be taken to include a reference to mixtures or combinations of that material or substance with other materials or substances. Any reference to goods of a given material or substance shall be taken to include a reference to goods consisting wholly or partly of such material or substance. What a mouthful. Let's take an example. A top made of cotton, which has a fur collar, could potentially be classified in two places, either with cotton garments or fur garments. Rule 2b says that the fur does not preclude it from being a garment of cotton, and the cotton does not preclude it from being a garment of fur. So, where do we classify it? Let's continue with the rest of Rule 2b. It says, a classification of goods consisting of more than one material or substance shall be according to the principles of Rule 3. After all that, we need to look at Rule 3 to decide where this garment will be classified. Another example of this rule would be the following. Imagine you import a Christmas gift set which contains a teddy bear, a book, and a badge. The problem that we have is that there may not be a specific code for a set of this type. Therefore, we have a product that contains a mixture of goods which are each potentially classified separately in different codes. How do we classify the set then? According to the teddy bear? Or do we classify it according to the book? Or do we classify it according to the badge? We, again, need to look at Rule 3. Rule 3 is quite long. You may wish to follow this in your legislation. It is split into Rules A, B, and C. We will take each of them in turn. Rule 3A says the following. The heading which provides the most specific description shall be preferred to headings providing a more general description. However, when two or more headings each refer to part only of the materials or substances contained in mixed or composite goods, or to part only of the items in a set put up for retail sale, those headings are to be regarded as equally specific in relation to those goods, even if one of them gives a more complete or precise description of the goods. To pull out the most important phrases in 3A, specific descriptions take precedence over general descriptions, but where sets of goods or combinations of goods are concerned, each potential heading is equally specific. This rule, then, does not help with our top composed of cotton and fur, or our set comprising the teddy bear, book, and badge, because the second part of the rule says that if each of the headings refers to part only of the goods, or to part of the items contained in a set, then each heading is to be regarded as equally specific. We now have to move on to Rule 3B. Rule 3B tells us, mixtures, composite goods consisting of different materials or made up of different components, and goods put up in sets for retail sale which cannot be classified by reference to 3A, shall be classified as if they consisted of the material or component which gives them their essential character. Again, to paraphrase this rule, in order to classify our fur-trimmed top, we need to decide what gives it its essential character. This is likely to be the cotton, as it makes up the majority of the item. Think, would you go out just wearing the fur without the cotton top? Probably not. Whereas you would go out wearing the cotton part without the fur. However, we might have trouble in deciding this for our set consisting of the teddy, the book, and the badge. It is hard to say that one of the items predominates over any of the others. If we have failed to classify our goods under Rule 3B, because we believe that none of the items in this set gives it its essential character, then we need to move on to Rule 3C. This rule says, when goods cannot be classified by reference to 3A or B, they shall be classified under the heading which occurs last in numerical order among those which equally merit consideration. Therefore, if we haven't been able to classify the goods yet, we will choose the heading that occurs last in numerical order in the tariff. The reason for this rule is that the tariff is set out so that raw materials appear first, and the more processed the goods are, the further on in the tariff they appear. As a result, the highest duty rates tend to be towards the end. Now that we are halfway through the rules, how about a test?